Chapter 18. Sen was impatient as she returned to the main cavern. It was a new sensation for her. Since her graduation from the academy, and even before, she had been capable of deep focus for extended periods of time. While she had heard some of the others complain about how much they disliked living in half-light all the time, Sen didn't mind this aspect of the mission. She had spent almost all of her time in a small room, alone with the comfortable glow of computer screens. Then her role had been passive, a translator, an observer. But now she was interacting, and in ways quite different from those she had anticipated. The subject of one of those ways was waiting for her, his strong, chiseled features drawn with worry. Sidori had noticed her reaction to the stormtrooper's murder, and they had talked about it a little bit, but he was still concerned about how she might be feeling. It was touching, and strange, and Sen was conflicted. If she was smaller and looked younger than her age, then Sidori was the opposite. Well-built and graceful, he looked older than Kaeve, who had 4 years on him. The Kagi, in general, were regarded as uncommonly beautiful among humans and near-humans, and Sidori was a fine example of that. How was it that this kind young man, who was so fierce when he fought, and so gentle when he did not, found it so easy to reconcile the level of violence that the dreamers advocated?
"Are you all right, Sen?" he asked solicitously.
"Yes," she said. "I've had some time to think."
To remind herself of why she was there, and to have a new goal to focus on.
"Sometimes hard choices are necessary ones. Is this something you had to learn too?"
"My people are born into lives of deprivation," he said. "I knew how to fight almost before I knew how to walk."
The fighting ability of the Kagi warriors, it was said, sometimes evoked comparison to the Jedi. They were physically powerful and phenomenally agile.
"We fought together as a team. Well, forever."
"Does your family still go on missions together?"
Sen inquired. As she listened to the response, which could be valuable, she also listened to conversations going on in other tongues.
"Change the security code and..."
"We used to, until Saw's death. Now when I go on a mission, one of my parents always comes with me while one stays behind."
She looked at him, askance.
"I don't understand. Why don't they want to fight together anymore?"
He looked embarrassed.
"It's silly,"
he said.
"Excellent place for a drop and run,"
Rue, Sidori's father, was saying quietly to Aizen.
"If you were trained so young, you obviously know how to take care of yourself."
"It's not that. Since Jedha things..."
He hesitated.
"We're dedicated. All of the dreamers, not just my family. You've seen it. We all go in with bombs on our bodies and we're ready to use them, but I'm their only child. And if something went wrong, they want someone there to protect me, and someone back here if... so there's one of them left for me to come back to."
Something inside Sen softened unexpectedly. It was such a strange juxtaposition. This calm discussion about bombs strapped on bodies and parents not wanting to leave a beloved child an orphan, even as their actions could make orphans of others. Impulsively, she reached out and squeezed his arm.
"Don't be ashamed of that," she said. "They love you. They know what we do is dangerous, and they want to minimize any risk you might have. I'm sure it's not because they don't respect you as a warrior."
His normally guarded face lit up with surprised pleasure. Then he gently placed his own large, strong hand over her small one.
"I think I finally understand how they might feel that way. I'm glad you're coming on a mission with me, but I wish you weren't, too,"
Sidori said.
"I wanted to ask you first, but I didn't think I should get your hopes up in case Davin said no. I thought it would be a good opportunity for you."
"Do you know the details?"
Sidori shook his head.
"Staven hasn't shared them yet. He likes to keep things close to his vest,"
Sen had noticed.
"You can say no if you want to."
"This is important," Sen said. "I want to be a part of it."
Gideon was holding forth about flying. Staven was laughing and had his arm around Nadrine, who snuggled into him with a soft, contented smile.
"It is important," Sidori agreed. Since Jetta, just like Staven said, there's been a fresh urgency. I'm glad we're in a unit with two people who actually knew Saw. I trust them to know what they're doing, how to make everything we do count. We need to strike and not hold back, no matter what the mission or the target. My family is fighting for something that's even more important than our homeworld. We're fighting for a future that doesn't involve fighting, Sidori said, his voice soft. He gazed at her intently, and his hand on hers was warm.
If he'd just tell us more,
Rue continued.
There you are, Aizen's voice. He was addressing Aiden and the mentor, who apparently had just returned.
Sidori sighed, squeezed Sen's hand, and let go as they both turned to the newcomers.
Where have you two been? More rehearsals?
As many as it takes, Aiden said before the mentor could speak.
I'll help as much as I can,
the mentor promised her.
How about now? Aiden suggested.
I like how you think, exclaimed the mentor. Let's go.
Sen watched them leave. Do you need to get back to work too? Sidori asked her.
Yes, Sen thought, I do.
She knew Del needed information about Aizen in order to conduct an efficient search of the ship's databank. But there was other work to be done, too. She turned to Sidori and took his large, strong hand in hers, curling her fingers about his.
I'd rather sit here and talk, she said. The mentor seems so nice. How long have you known him?
Piakow had been resting, which had given Del the time he'd needed to upgrade Aiden's comlink and discuss Sen's discovery. After the conversation, Del took advantage of the fact that he had his droid, but not his minder, and went to the cavern where Aiden's old JSEC starfighter was being kept. His first thought had been to access the computer. Aiden had replied that, unfortunately, she would not be of help in this case. During her time under house arrest on Vardos, she had not been permitted to have access to the ship's computer for anything other than routine flights. Only her co-pilot, most recently one Aizen Novarin, also known by a host of other aliases, knew that. So Del had to rely on the droid. He kept one eye on the entrance to the cavern while the droid hummed and beeped as it attempted to bypass security protocols. Sen had offered to compile a list for Del of everything she knew about Aizen, so soon he would have a list of keywords to look for. They were all bringing their best game towards this abruptly urgent task, but Del never quite realized just how alone they would be if things didn't go according to plan. The mineral composition of the planet's rocks, which helped conceal the Dreamer's vessels and technology, also made any contact impossible unless it was local, or the communication equipment was out in the open. There was no way for Inferno Squad to contact the Admiral that wouldn't be detected. The hope was that soon at least one member of the team would be deemed trustworthy enough to fly solo. Then, whoever it was might possibly be able to get a message out. If the mission went well, that moment might arrive sooner rather than later. But it sure as hell wasn't now. Del simply had to hope they'd get lucky. Because if they didn't, it would only be a matter of time before a trained Imperial agent, double or not, would sniff them out. He had barely started when Piakow calmed him.
Come back to the cavern, he chirped. There's something I want to show you.
Frustrated, Del asked. Are you sure? I can keep working on my own if you want to rest some more.
I'm certain. And there's plenty of time to sleep when you're dead, so come on back.
Curious as to what this was all about, Del obeyed. Piakow had a sly, satisfied look on his bat-like face as he bustled Del into a speeder that he himself, naturally, had revamped to suit his small stature as driver.
Staven gave me this one in exchange for my promise to quit trying to, improve the others without express permission,
he said, in all seriousness.
It looks terrific,
Del said politely. Actually, it looked slightly insane. Piakow had completely gutted the interior.
The entire console had been redesigned with all the buttons and the steering wheel sized to the Chandrafan's smaller fingers and much shorter reach. They were also much prettier than standard utilitarian buttons and glowed like tiny gemstones. Pia Kao's seat was designed to accommodate his size and was luxuriously padded, and the crash webbing was decorative as well as efficient. The overall effect was that the small furred driver was snuggled in securely, wrapped almost like a baby in a blanket. It would have been funny, except that Pia Kao looked so pleased and content with the results. Dell didn't know what his friend had done with the ship's engine, but when he climbed in and Pia Kao took off, it was a startlingly smooth and swift ride. "Where are we going?" he asked as the speeder zipped along. "Did you know," said Pia Kao, answering with another question,
"that there used to be a sentient species on Geosyn?"
"I did not," Dell admitted.
"Since I'm not able to go on any missions, I've spent my time here, learning about this world. These long dawns and twilights and the even longer days and nights, everything had to evolve to accommodate that. The animal life, for instance, nearly everything that's not rooted down either migrates or hibernates. And because the dawns and dusks are so long, there's a whole variety of species that live just in those windows. It's fascinating."
Dell wasn't a scientist, but Pia Kao's enthusiasm was contagious. It was kind of interesting. He settled back in to listen.
"And the plants," Pia Kao crowed. "Incredible! They alternate between the sun and volcanic activity for their energy. There's so much to learn here. So many different examples of ways to think creatively. For instance, you already know that one of the reasons we're so safe here is that there's a unique combination of minerals in the planet's surface that prevents anyone from scanning us. Isn't that helpful? What could we do with that? If we had the resources to understand the combination..."
Dell realized that Pia Kao had been squandered laboring in a factory. If someone in the Empire had reached out to him and his family and given him a place in research... But that was a dark road to go down, and a futile one. What was done, was done. He redirected Pia Kao back to the original topic. "Tell me about the sentient life," he said.
"Oh, right. Well, I can't."
Dell blinked. "What?"
"Well, I can't because we've no idea what happened to them. I've read up on the archaeological expeditions, and they're all laced with extreme frustration. The most recent one happened over a century ago. Everyone washed their hands of this place because there's just not anything to explore. The species left no remains, no buildings, very few tools, no writing or art that's recognizable as such, and no technology. Except for one thing."
"What?" Pia Kao, who had been diligently keeping his eyes forward and his hands on the tiny wheel, now gave Dell a devious glance.
"That's where we're going."
Dell frowned.
"Give me a hint."
The Chandrafan, clearly delighted with Dell's reaction, shook his large-eared head.
"Nope. You'll see."
Resigned, Dell settled back into his seat and closed his eyes. And then the next thing he knew, Pia Kao was poking him with his clawed, stubby fingers and saying,
"We're here. Wake up."
"Here" seemed to be yet another cavern. Pia Kao climbed out of the speeder, retrieved his walking stick and lantern, and moved towards the yawning entrance. Dell swung his long legs out and caught up quickly.
"I found what I'm about to show you quite by accident a few years ago,"
Pia Kao said, a bit sheepishly.
"When I first arrived, I'd built my little speeder and was doing some exploring of my own. Not the wisest idea, considering I fell and crashed through an extraordinarily thin layer of rock into a second cavern below. Fortunately, I was able to get out. In the meantime, I discovered something wonderful. Come on."
He ambled farther inside the cavern. Dell followed, and then he stopped. Is it my imagination, or is it getting lighter in here?
It is, or isn't. I mean, it's not your imagination. The light is coming from the hole I made when I fell through.
The two continued on, the light growing stronger, a cool indigo illumination. Del could see the aforementioned hole in the stone floor now, and a ladder poking up from it. Another lamp and various tools and a length of rope sat at the ready beside the mouth. Pia Kao went to the ladder and plunked down his lamp. Carefully, he began to descend, pausing only to wave Del forward.
Come on, come on.
Del didn't need much more urging. Other than pausing to ascertain whether the ladder would bear his weight, he followed willingly. Like darkness made visible, the indigo radiance wrapped around him as he descended. When his feet touched solid ground, Del turned around and started back, gasping. They were huge, and they were stone, and they were still. And they stretched back as far as the eye could see. They had heads and arms and legs, and the beautiful, eerie purple light was shining from what passed for eye sockets.
Statues, he murmured. They're beautiful.
And a trifle alarming, Pia Kao said. I must confess, I was scared to death for a moment when I first saw them.
Del wasn't going to admit to having the same reaction. If the creations before him had been crafted to resemble their long-dead mysterious creators, the beings had been near-human, though the faces, save for those eerie, radiant eye sockets, were a complete blank. The heads didn't even have hair, or a realistic shape, just a perfect orb perched atop a surprisingly detailed form. The figures had cloven feet and hands that had two opposable thumbs. They were even modestly dressed with artfully carved draping folds and breeches covering forms that appear to be androgynous. Was this how they actually looked? Del wondered. Or were these completely imaginary beings constructed by ancient crafters? Why so many? Del wondered aloud. And why were they all locked away down here?
Ha! If we only knew, sighed the Chadrafan. But someday we might. I do know one thing, though.
Pia Kao seized Del's hand and tugged him farther down the cavern. One of the statues had fallen, and Pia Kao had covered it with a blanket. It presented a curious image, as if the Chadrafan had been concerned that the statue might catch a chill.
This one toppled down for some reason. Look!
With a flourish, the Chadrafan pulled off the blanket. The simply carved orb that served the statue for a head had cracked open, revealing purple crystals. Clearly, the ancient denizens of Geosin had used crystals to mimic glowing eyes. But there weren't simply two crystals inside the hollow skull. There were three. Two smaller ones and a much larger one. Del's gaze wandered down the body from the head. Pia Kao had taken tools to the statue, opening it up further, and now Del could see that it was not, as he had thought, carved of solid stone. It was as hollow as the head was, and inside the ceramic torso, arranged in all the places that one might expect to find organs in living beings, crystals of different sizes and shapes were positioned. These two had been carefully carved. Tentatively, Del reached out and touched one of the crystals. It was polished to perfect smoothness, and it was warm. Stunned, he looked over at a gleeful Pia Kao.
You see, don't you? These figures, they weren't pieces of art or architecture, the Chadrafan said, his high voice hushed with awe. These were machines.
Del sank back on his heels, wonder flowing through him.
But why create them just to put them down here? What was their purpose?
Maybe, Pia Kao said, if we could get one working, it could tell us.
Del looked back at the tumbled down... droid? He supposed that was what it was, technically. A droid made of stone and crystal instead of metal, plastoid, and wiring.
Do you have the time to work on this?
Rarely.
the little tinkerer replied, sighing.
You're aware of how few of us know how to fix things when they break, especially since most of the things we get are already broken in some way. They have me working for hours on end. There's always something to keep me busy.
He turned from gazing raptly at the droid to peer conspiratorially at Del.
But if another talented technician just happened to show up, who could speed up those regular repairs by working with me as a team, maybe both of us could create some free time to work on these stone fellows down here.
Del was torn. He was here for a mission, to recover the lost information that had revitalized the Dreamers. And now there was a secondary one, investigate Azen. He should stay as close to as many of the cell members as possible, so that he could overhear and observe anything that might be useful. But he'd never imagined stumbling across anything like this. Inhabitants of the galaxy over the millennia had utilized crystal energy as fuel, and the Death Star itself, of course, had been so awe-inspiringly deadly because it drew its energy from kyber crystals. But these crystals just seemed to sit there. He knew it would drive him crazy to walk away from this. Maybe there was a way to make it work out so he could do both. Pia Kao was a chatty little fellow. If Del could direct the Chadrafan's attention properly, Pia Kao might unwittingly reveal information he wasn't supposed to. And it wasn't as if he wouldn't be able to spend as much time as he needed working for the squad before heading down here. Inferno Squad was first. Always. But this could be second. Del made his decision. Maybe we could, he said, and smiled.